Oh, too low, sorry. All right, so I'm going to start. We're going into the second half of this course now. I'm going to be your lecturer for the second half. And what I'm going to do today is a brief recap on what you've learned so far. Actually, I'm not really doing a brief recap on what you've learned so far. I'm going to ditz it. I'm going to say it's crap for a particular kind of problem. And I mean, it's brilliant for some problems, but not for the problems we're going to be studying over the next couple of weeks. And I'm going to introduce what that problem is and propose a language for expressing the problem. The vast majority, although we're going to stay within symbolic models and qualitative models for solving problems for a couple of weeks, most of what I'm going to do is involve solving problems when there's uncertainty of various kinds. You're either uncertain about the state you're in, you're uncertain about the effects your actions will have, and so on. So I'd say 80% of what I'm going to present to you is based on probability theory. I will be going through probability theory, but at such a breakneck speed, the fundamentals of probability theory, like Bayes' rule. I'm going to go through the fundamentals at such breakneck speed that right now, if you don't feel confident about your grasp of fundamental probability theory, now's probably a good time to revise it. Ultimately, this course will culminate in proposing models for making decisions under uncertainty, rational decisions, ones that are designed to maximize your expected preferences. It's a sort of combination of utility theory and probability theory. But for the time being, we're staying qualitative, which means that we're going to work in a deterministic environment where when we perform actions, we know exactly what effects they're going to have and where we know what the state is. All right, so you've dealt with various kinds of agency, right? You've learnt a bunch of jargon, like episodic versus sequential, deterministic versus non-deterministic, and so on, that are used to characterize various notions of agency. You've been equipped with various intelligent problem-solving techniques, some of them more intelligent than others. So A-star is at least an informed search that does some decisions about where to search next in your search tree based on some sort of measure of how close you're going to get to the goal. You've also looked at constraint solving, looking at, for example, arc consistency algorithms. You've also been tortured with logic, both propositional logic and first-order logic, and algorithms for performing inferences within those logics. So for propositional logic, you had generalized modus ponens. Hello.
Tortured.
Tortured. Well, tortured for most of you. Some people actually like logic. I happen to be one of them, but I know most people don't. I love logic. I'm going to torture you with some more logic, actually, over the next couple of weeks of a particular variety. But anyway, you've had automated inference procedures over them, algorithmic inference procedures over them. So you've got generalized modus ponens for propositional logic and these resolution methods and proof by contradiction for first order logic. And you've had the situation calculus, which has provided you with a language in which you can express and reason about action and time. What we're going to look at now is a particular suite of problems known as planning problems, and eventually we are going to be looking at planning problems when you live in an uncertain world, as we all do, right? Okay, so planning, right, is the task of coming up with a sequence of actions that will get you from the state you're in to the goal state that you want, okay? You've got a goal you want to achieve. You've got a suite of actions you could perform. Planning is deciding which sequence of actions to perform to achieve your goal. All right? Now, we're going to be considering, in the first instance, classical planning. So classical planning makes a lot of idealized assumptions. It assumes that you're in a fully observable environment, right? So you know exactly what state you're in. All actions have specific effects, and they're guaranteed. Those effects are guaranteed to occur. Nothing ever goes wrong when you perform an action. Everything that occurs, you expected it to occur. You're working in a finite domain, okay? So there's a finite number of objects, finite number of individuals, and so on. And we're going to assume a static environment. In other words, you're the only agent in it, and nothing changes unless you perform an action to change it. Okay? And actions are discrete. Nothing's happening in a continuous environment here. So massively, massively idealized environment. Nothing like the real world. Nothing like what you as a human being have to sort of, this is vastly simpler than most of the planning problems you as a human being encounter. As the course goes, as the next 5 weeks or whatever it is progresses, we are going to lift virtually all these assumptions, okay? The only one we're not going to lift is this static one, okay? I'm going to assume that, static in the sense that I'm never going to consider a multi-agent environment. Nature will work against you. Nature will do things that upset you, but other agents won't. So we're going to stay within the realms of decision theory and not progress towards game theory. If you're interested in game theory, there are third year courses that allow you to study that, and fourth year ones, and beyond. Game theory's fabulous stuff, but wrong. Anyway, never mind about game theory. Let's go back to where we are. All right, so you've looked at search-based problem-solving agents. So we started with breadth-first search over a search tree and depth-first search, and then did slightly more intelligent things like A*. And you've had logic as well. Now, you'd think, that's a bunch of reasoning techniques and algorithms that I should bring to bear to planning. Surely that's enough. Why isn't it, right? Why don't these techniques solve planning problems, deciding on a sequence of actions to achieve a goal? Let me try and explain why. So this is the bit where I ditch the 5 weeks of pain that you've, endured as you learn this stuff. Now I'm going to tell you why it's not sufficient for planning. All right, so let's consider planning. Using a search-based agent, okay? Right, so the task is, I want to buy some milk, bananas, and a cordless drill, okay? That's the goal state. I want to possess those three things, and I'm in a state where I'm at home possessing none of those things. And so there are actions I can perform, like going to the pet store, going to school, catching a bus, going to sleep, sitting on my sofa and watching TV. There's loads of actions I can perform. And I can buy things as well if I'm at the store, and so on. Each state provides preconditions for a bunch of actions that I could perform. And they will, those actions, as you've learnt from the situation calculus, will stick me in a new state, depending on what the action is and what effects it has. Okay? So if you're a search-based agent, what you end up with is a tree that looks like this. Here's the current state, and here's all the actions I can perform from the current state. And those actions put me into some descendant state, and from there I can perform a bunch of actions, and so on and so on and so on. Okay? And spattered around in here will be some goal states. In other words, states where I've got that milk, bananas, and a cordless drill. Okay? Now, if you're a depth-first search agent dealing with this tree, then there is no guarantee that you won't construct a really stupid plan. Okay? First of all, actually, this becomes really unmanageable the minute the planning problem becomes anything like realistic. Your tree is so massive that it's ridiculous, and depth first won't ever get you to the goal in any realistic circumstance, neither will breadth first. The same applies to breadth first. But even if it does, there's no guarantee that the plan you get, in other words, that the sequence of actions that gets you to the first goal state that you encounter in your search isn't a stupid plan. Like, I get up from my seat, I go to the store, I buy my milk, I go back home, stick the milk in the fridge, I go back to the same store and I buy bananas, I go back home, stick the bananas in my fruit basket, and then, whoa-ho, I go back to the same shop and buy the cordless drill, okay? So there's no guarantee I won't go to the store three times. Now, of course, we've had, indeed, there may be other things I do, like go to the store, buy milk, and sell it on to my neighbor, and then go back to the store and buy some more milk, right? There's no notion in something like depth-first search of a good plan, a high-quality plan that's efficient, that minimizes the effort I've got to put into getting that goal state, right? It is fluke if you find a goal state with most problems of any complexity using something like depth-first or breadth-first search on these problems. But even if you do, the plan, the sequence of actions may be kind of dumb. Okay? Now, A-star was designed to solve that problem, right? It works according to heuristics that measure how close you are to a goal state. And so long as those heuristics are admissible, the route to that, to get from the initial state you're in to the goal state, is guaranteed to be optimal in the sense that, you know, you are conserving energy, if you like, or whatever optimal means for you. You have to define what optimal means for you, which is brilliant. But the problem is that A-star has massive informational demands on the heuristics. It has to be the kind of problem where you can quantify with numbers how close you are to the goal, and quantify with numbers what it costs you to get from one state to the next by performing an action. And a lot of problems where you are trying to transform an initial state into some goal state just aren't like that. You just can't assign numbers to how close you are to your goal. It's just not like that. And in fact, I would argue that going and, you know, getting milk, bananas, and a cordless drill is a bit like that. I mean, am I any closer to the goal if I'm halfway to the shops than sitting at home? Well, I don't know. It depends if I have internet access and can get online delivery. I mean, who knows, right? It's certainly not something I could stick a number on. So there's, you know, although A-star in principle is really useful, it's only useful if you can express the problem, the search problem, while meeting its very heavy demands of information on measuring closeness to the goal. All right, so so much for that. There seems to be, a problem with all these search-based mechanisms that when you're in some state in the search, you've got a simple goal test, right? Does this state satisfy my goal? Yes or no? It's black and white, right? It's yes, it does. No, it doesn't. If it doesn't, keep searching, right? That's the idea. Whereas in reality, when planning, there is in some sense, this, for example, this planning problem of buying milk, bananas, and cordless drill, there are sub-goals you can achieve, like get bananas, right? It's a sub-goal. Getting bananas is a sub-goal of getting bananas, milk, and a cordless drill. Now, logic's really brilliant for that, right? Because if you can specify the goal as a bunch of conjunctions, right? My goal is to have bananas, milk, and a cordless drill. Boy, you know, and what the conjuncts are basically telling you what the sub-goals are, right? To achieve that conjunction, I have to achieve each of the conjuncts. So it is a natural way of dividing goals. Logic provides a natural way of dividing goals into sub-goals. That's at least if they're independent goals. That's a big if, actually. And it also allows for a sort of compact description of the actions. So if I've got an object, then I can grab it, for example, through its use of variables here. I can state general rules about actions, and that's very useful as well. And you know, I can then ground them, as you've learned over the last couple of weeks, and prove things with the grounded terms and sort of match those generalizations and, you know, to the particular state I find myself in and infer things about how to achieve things. So logic is helpful here. But the problem with logic is twofold. First of all, for any planning problem of any complexity, you are talking about objects, okay? And you do want generalizations like this. And if you're not very careful, this looks like propositional logic on its own won't hack it, right? Because we've got predicates and arguments. I need to know about the participants in an event, for example. How many participants are there? And if you go for full-blown first-order logic, then the validity problem is actually uncomputable. There is no algorithm which will guarantee, given a test, something that you want to test, is it valid or not? Will this action get me into the state, guaranteed get me into the state I want to be? If you're working in first-order logic, there's no algorithm that can answer that question. So that's a disaster, right? It means we can't automate planning. But even if we could, even if we're working in some sub-fragment of first-order logic for which the validity problem's computable, logic doesn't have, on its own, a sort of notion of a good quality proof, which here would align with a good quality plan. In other words, if you can prove some goal from some sequence of actions, say P, then if P is a sequence of actions that achieves the goals, and so is P preceded by an action, and then its inverse, where you undo its effects. That's a proof too, that gets you from the initial state to the goal. And as far as logic's concerned, P, and this extended thing where you do something that's a total waste of time, they're just as good as each other, right? There's no notion of quality of proof here. So logic on its own isn't good enough. We need kind of logic plus a notion of what a good quality plan is, but not a notion of quality of plan that has the informational demands that, for example, A-star has on the heuristics about reaching sub-goals and so on. So that's what we want to work on over the next few lectures. And so what we're going to do then is start with logic as our starting point to deal with the fact that first-order logic is uncomputable, the validity problem is uncomputable. We're going to reduce its complexity by designing a language that's not full-blown first-order logic. It's not as rich as that, but it's rich enough to express and reason about a reasonable suite of planning problems. And then over that sort of fragment of first order logic, we're going to supply some algorithms for reasoning about it that are guided in particular by some notion of plan quality or efficiency. So that's the extra bit that planning does over and above what logic does. Now, I'm not going to go into the reasoning yet. We're going to do that next time. What I'm going to do today is design that language in which we express planning problems. Okay? All right, so let's make a start on that. Right. Now, planning is the task of choosing a sequence of actions that gets you from the state you're in into a state in which you achieve your goals, whatever they are. So we're going to need to describe three things. States, actions, which are transitions between states, and goals. Now, goals are typically a partial description of a state. My goals, you know, if my goal is to own milk bananas and a cordless drill, and that's all my goals are, that's all I care about, then I really don't care if we're in the Appleton Tower or not, for example. You know, there's loads of stuff about the state about which I don't care. And that's why a goal is always a partial description of a state. It's essentially imposing constraints on the state that you want to be in. And there could be several states that satisfy that goal. All right, so we're going to design a language in which you can express those three things. And it's a standard language within the planning community called Planning Domain Definition Language, or PDDL. Okay? And it is a fragment of first-order logic. And in fact, its computational complexity, I think, is equivalent to propositional logic. I may be wrong about that. I don't think I'm wrong about it. No, it must be simpler than that, actually. Take that back, because it doesn't have disjunction. Anyway, here we go. So states are represented by positive conjunctions of... States are expressed as conjunctions of positive literals with no variables. They've got to be ground terms, constants, okay? So there's no negation in the representation of the state. And the reason that that works is because you're working under a closed world assumption. In other words, if the state doesn't express anything about something, then it's false, okay? So the fact that it does not say... that, for example, plane 3 is in London Heathrow means that it's false that plane 3 is at London Heathrow. Okay, so it's closed world. All of these things aren't states. These little formulae here are not states. So at XY is not a state because it is calling on variables. You've got to have ground terms. Love of father Fred is not a state because you're not allowed to have function symbols in the description of a state, and not happy as a state because you can't have negation in the description of a state. However, all of those things, as it turns out, could be goals. Okay, they are partial descriptions of a state. Okay, so for example, not happy, that is a goal, and it is the goal that I be not happy, right? At X SFO is the goal that something is at San Francisco Airport. I don't care what. Okay? Love father of Fred is the goal that the father of Fred love Fred. And this goal, for example, is not satisfied by this state, because as far as this state is concerned, nothing's at San Francisco. Okay? And this goal is not satisfied by this state because it contains happy, and I want to be not happy. Okay? So you're checking to see if goals are satisfied by states. All right. Now, actions have three components. The first component is the action name, followed by the parameters, or if you can think of these as the participants in the action. Now, anything you specify in the preconditions or in the effects have to appear here as parameters, okay? So this is the action of flying a plane, P, from somewhere to somewhere. Okay? That's the first component of an action. The second is a precondition, which is a partial description of a state. So like goals, it can contain negations and things like that, and variables, as in fact this one does, because P from 2 are all variables, okay, which you will get ground if you decide to do a particular action on a particular plane, from a particular place to a particular place. When you perform actions, all of these things have to be converted into ground terms. You can't perform actions on variables. Right, so the preconditions then of flying a plane from to is that the plane be at from, that it is a plane, that from is an airport, and that to is an airport. Okay, so you can only fly from airport to airport, is essentially what this is saying. And your plane better be at the start destination. The third component is the effects. And you can think of these, well, you can think of these as a partial description of a state, but actually, in terms of the way these things are normally implemented, they're instructions about how to change the state you were in. When you get a negation, then you delete that literal if it was in your initial state. And when you get a positive thing, you add it, okay? So the effect of flying this plane P from the airport from to the airport to is that the plane's not at from anymore, and it is at to. Now notice I have to delete and add. There is no notion in here, no logic in here that tells me the plane can't be in two places at once. Okay, that's true of the world. But it's not, you don't have generalizations like that in PDDL. You have to exhaustively list all the things that change. You can't rely on inference to get those changes in this story, okay? So I can't have an effect that is just at P2 and rely on knowledge that the plane can't be at two places at once to delete the knowledge that the plane is at P from. Or in fact, it's not at from. Okay? Any questions so far? That clear, huh? All right. So because of the way these things are implemented normally, sometimes the effects are divided into a delete list and an add list. And any of these negated guys basically are in the delete list. And any of the add things are in the add list. And of course, you only delete if it's there in the initial state. If it's not there, the negated effect has no effect within that state. Okay. So like I said, states are essentially the models for this language when you're interpreting them. And the sort of satisfaction relation is essentially defined over partial descriptions of states. So a state satisfies a positive ground literal like this, if and only if it's a conjunct in that state. It satisfies the negation only if it's not a conjunct in that state. Where you've got variables, then the state satisfies that term with a variable only if there's a ground term D, such that the state satisfies that term, that literal phi, where X is substituted with D. And it satisfies conjunctions if and only if it satisfies both conjuncts. So it's kind of what you'd expect. Okay. Okay. Right. So, but that's not all there is to PDDL, right? I mean, so we've got states, we've got goals, we've got these action schemata. The reason they're called schemata is because they're working over variables, and to turn them into specific actions, you've got to turn those variables into ground terms, okay? So each action schemata is actually a description of a massive suite of actions, loads of actions, one for each combination of ground terms that you can use to substitute for the variables. But among those suites of actions, there'll be some that are applicable in the current state and some that you are inapplicable. And roughly speaking, applicable actions are actions that you can perform in the current state. In other words, you have a substitution of those variables in the action name to ground terms such that the preconditions are satisfied by the state you're in. Okay? So, what did I just do? Right, so suppose we're in a state where we've got two planes, P1 and P2, right? And P1's at Melbourne, P2's at Sydney, and they're airports. And we've also got an airport Heathrow, no planes at Heathrow, okay? Now, this state satisfies this description, which happens to be the precondition for the action of flying a plane P from the airport from to an airport to, with actually a whole bunch of substitutions, but among others, with this particular substitution, where I substitute P to be plane 2, from to be Sydney, and 2 to be Heathrow, right? So 2's got to be an airport, yes it is, if 2 is Heathrow. Sydney has to be an airport, yes it is, right? Here's Sydney being an airport. And P's got to be a plane, yes it is, right? And P's got to be at that airport from, yes it is, because P2's at Sydney. Okay, so each one of those conjuncts gets satisfied with this substitution. That's just logic at work. You've already learned algorithms for computing this kind of thing, right? Yes?
Is there any implicit assumption that from and to have to be different?
Oh, I'll get to that. Well observed, I'll get to that. Right. Okay. So, this action then of flying is applicable in this particular way. I could fly. What it means is I could perform the action of flying this plane P2 from Sydney to Heathrow. I could also perform the action of flying P1 from Melbourne to Heathrow or Melbourne to Sydney. Okay. Now, what about the action of flying P2 from Sydney to Sydney? In answer to your question, do I want to get to that now? Why don't I answer that now? Now, look at this look at the action description, right? It says delete the location of the plane where you started and add the location where you end up. Okay. Now, if that's how you do it, if you perform those actions on the state, if you affect those changes on the state in order, do you end up in that order, in the order in which the conjuncts appear? Do you end up in a consistent state? Hands up, yes. Right answer, hands up, no. Wait, you're not going to say that now, right? If, however, you look at this logically, it looks like you end up in a contradiction, right? Where I'm saying that the plane is not at Sydney, and it is. Yeah? But in planning, that's not... When you're implementing planners, that's not what happens. You don't just have logic. You have logic plus control, right? You are sort of performing particular effects as defined by your effects list in the order of the conjunctions. And as a result of that, you sort of delete that the plane P2 was at Sydney and then put it back again. So it is actually possible with this action description to fly that plane P2 from Sydney back to Sydney and stay in a consistent state and know that you're still in Sydney. Okay? All right, so the result of executing an action, like I said, what you do is you take the state you're in, and remember, we're assuming a fully observable environment now for the purposes of the next couple of lectures. So we always know exactly what state we're in. And you change it into this state S prime as per instructed by the effects, by deleting and adding. So if I were to fly that plane P2 from Sydney to Heathrow, I'd be deleting that P2 is at Sydney, adding that P2 is at Heathrow, that thing in red. Sydney at P2 at Sydney is gone. And everything else stays the same. And anything that's in the action description, that's not described in the action description, that's in the state, stays the same. That's their solution to the frame problem, okay? Whatever the effects list doesn't talk about isn't affected. Now, it means that in reality, writing action descriptions can be really, really hard, okay? Because you can't rely on general knowledge like you can't be in two places at the same time. To have an initial description of effects have the desired effects across the whole state, you've got to specify them all. And that's where human error can creep in. If you're a programmer writing a planner and writing actions that you want to perform in that world. Okay, so so if your goal state was to get P2 to Heathrow, then you know the fly action would do it. Okay, but of course you know you're going to have to search for that action or sequence of actions more generally for getting you from states to goals. We'll come to that next time. I just want to talk about the language for now. All right, so planning people tend to use the blocks world to describe a whole suite of planning problems. I mean, it's a bizarre community, the planning community. They really are. They have all sorts of competitions for their various planners that they're developing, and they have standardized a suite of planning problems over which anyone who wants to get ahead in the planning community have to make their planner perform brilliantly on that suite of problems. Loads of the problems are described in a blocks world. That's a world in which you've got blocks on a table, and you can put blocks one on top of the other, and all the planning problems are a mapping from some initial state where you've got the blocks in some configuration to a goal state where they're in another configuration, different blocks piled on top. And the actions are to move blocks, basically. And which sounds simple, but it becomes very complex very quickly, depending on how many blocks you have. And, you know, this is the kind of suite of problems that they're testing their planners on. And, well, there's a whole host of other areas where you would want to plan actions that just aren't anything like the blocks world. But anyway, that's what they work on. Right, okay, so like the area I work in with, you know, analysis of conversation. How do I plan the next thing I'm going to say? It really isn't like blocks. Anyway, but because they do loads of stuff with blocks, let's look at blocks. All right, so how would we describe this world? So we got blocks sitting on a table, and we have blocks piled on top of each other. So we want to be able to say that a block is on something. For example, X could be another block, or it could be the table if it's the bottom block in a pile. We want to be able to move blocks from one place to another. And in fact, I can't move a block unless that block, imagine it's a robot arm like this, you know, some kind of claw-like arm. I can't move a block. I can only move a block one at a time. And I can't move that block unless it's got no blocks on top of it. It's got to be clear. Its top's got to be clear. And if I'm going to move it to be on top of another block, that block's got to be clear as well. Okay? Okay. So here's the action then for moving something from X to Y. First of all, if I'm moving that block B from X to Y, it better be on X. Otherwise, I'm not moving it from X, I'm moving it from somewhere else. Like I said, we're in an environment where to move it, it's got to be clear. I can't have anything on top of it. If it does have something on top of it and I want to move it, I better move that thing that's on top of it first, right? And whatever I'm moving it to has to be clear as well. A sufficient surface area clear that I can place B on top of it. Now, if I perform this action, then as a result of it, B is not going to be on X anymore, right? So I delete that. It's going to be on Y instead. And because I've taken B off X, X is now going to be clear where it wasn't before. And Y is not clear anymore, okay? Because it's going to have B on it, okay? So there's my move action. Okay, so you think, oh, Bloch's world's trivial. It's not, actually, because for any, well, you'll see why. I won't go into it now. I'm getting ahead of myself. Anyway, Bloch's world really isn't trivial because you have to reason in a nonlinear way. Depending on the configuration, sometimes you have to undo things that are really close to the goal to get to the goal. Imagine a situation. This is partly what makes search in planning problematic. Suppose I've got A, B, C. That's my initial state, and the state I want is B, C, A. Okay? Now, here, C is on B, which is what I want. But I have to undo it, right? And go away from my goal before I can reach my goal, because I have to take C off and then B off so that I can then reach A to stick him ultimately on top, right? So even in this simple Bloch's world, you've got a nonlinear reasoning problems, which complicates search considerably. Anyway, there's move. Don't worry about search for now. Let's get back to the language. There's move. The problem with this action is if X or Y are the table, okay? Now, the Bloch's world assumes you've got basically a table of infinite surface area. And so when you take a block off it and stick it on something, it is not true that the table's not clear anymore. And yet this action is saying it's not clear anymore. Okay? So that's bad. That's if I'm taking a block and putting it on a table. It should remain clear, and this action is saying it doesn't remain clear. Okay, so that means that I need a special action for moving a block from something to a table where I don't delete that the thing I moved it to was clear. And so there's the second action we need. The weird thing is that this action doesn't stop Y from being a table. So now I've got two actions for describing what happens when I move a block from something to a table, which is potentially problematic. You can solve it by adding a precondition that Y is not a table into this action. Okay? And then you're back to having only one way of moving a block from something to a table, which has the effects you intend, which is that the table's still clear, okay? Now, for moving an action from a table to something, this'll be okay, because the preconditions doesn't say that the table's clear or not clear, and the table's always clear, and you're basically saying, yeah, table's always clear. The table is clear here, which is fine, it's a benign effect. Okay, so if you're moving from the table to something, this action's okay. It's the moving to the table where it's a problem, because you'll be saying the table's not clear when it is. Okay? So, but by having these two actions, you're increasing the search space. So you've encountered this before in lectures and in tutorials. The state, you know, that very often when you're trying to express a planning problem, it's worthwhile putting a lot of effort into working out the right level of abstraction for expressing your problem, okay? Coming up with the right representation. In other words, the appropriate action descriptions, the appropriate predicates and objects you want to talk about, and abstracting over anything whose things you just don't care about. They're not going to affect your transition from initial states to goals. And in fact, if you get the design of your particular PD, your domain-specific PDDL language right for the planning suite of planning problems you're interested in, that's half the problem solved. Okay. All right, so to summarize then, I've defined the planning problem. It is, you've got an initial state, you've got a goal you want to achieve. Planning problem is to choose a sequence of actions that gets you from one to the other. Okay? Logic as it stands on its own isn't good enough for solving this problem, because logic doesn't give you on its own the notion of a good quality proof. Logic is happy so long as you've got a proof. And it doesn't. The logic doesn't care if the proof is long and convoluted. Just doesn't care. It goes, hurrah, I'm proved. That's all it does. Search is on its own, or at least the suite of search mechanisms you've learned on their own are insufficient. Either they're stupid, like depth-first and breadth-first search, and will give you plans that are poor quality plans, if they give you a plan at all, or it's a search algorithm like A*STAR whose informational demands on the heuristics you've got to use are just too hard. They're, you know, not all search spaces in planning are ones where you can quantify how, with numbers, how close you are to the goal or how far away you are from the goal. So what we're going to use then is logic, but a particular fragment of logic, namely PDDL, plus some search mechanisms for proofs for getting from a state to a goal, where the search mechanism is guided by some notion of plan quality, right? So what we're going to look at next time then is that search, those algorithms for planning. And we'll look at two, state-space search and partial order planning, okay? And you can think of these roughly as equivalent to something like A*STAR, and this is something like constraint solving. Okay? Roughly. Right, any questions? Okay, see you Thursday. Yeah, but it's not just a reaction. It's a reaction guided by my goals, right? So, and those goals may be ones that I've just adopted because you've got those goals, right? So, it's always goal-directed. I mean, I'm never just blabbing. I'm speaking with a particular purpose in mind. You sort of have an intention about what it is you want to achieve with your dialogue act, and you're in the state you're in, and it's about deciding the sequence of utterances that will achieve that intention. So if my intention is that you believe something, say my intention is that you believe it's raining, the action I may choose to perform is to assert it's raining. If my action is that you shut the door, right, that you actually perform an action that changes the world, then my action may be to utter an imperative, like shut the door, please. Or it may be to go, bruh, it's cold in here, right? In which case, yeah, so. Yeah, that's my point. It's not Bloch's world, is it?
It's quite strange because I thought it's just something you can use for a single representation and translate most of the problems to the Bloch's world.
Not everything can be translated into the Bloch's world, and dialogue planning is one of them, if only because it's not fully observable, right? So I don't know what's going on in your head, but my estimates of what your mental state is guides my decisions about what to say.
Something is changing in states
Yes, and yes, and it, when you're in a conversation, there's another agent around, which you don't get with the blocks world, right? There's a bunch of reasons why it's not like blocks. Yeah.
Why not?
After this meeting, you guys will stop it.